Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Yes, hello, welcome to another episode of Tech Talk. Stephen Scott back with you here. Robin Christofferson with me as always. Hello, Robin.
Absolute pleasure. I'm really excited.
Yeah, great to have you here. Andy's there as well somewhere. Hello, Andy.
Hello, Stephen. Hello, Robin. Hello.
Now, I should say, I hope, first of all, have you all washed your hands?
That's all I ever do now. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I had in the news the other day, you've got to moisturise your hands after as well, because otherwise you can get cracks in your skin and the infection can get in that way as well. Wow.
Unless you're using hand sanitizer, yeah.
Well, yeah, unless you're using that, if you can get any. You can get your hands on any. That's the thing, isn't it? Look, we are actually doing the show a bit differently this week, as in physically. We're not all in the same studio. We're all on location in our various places. I'm at home. Robin, you at home?
Yes.
In your castle?
Christofferson Towers.
Christofferson Towers. Lord Towers, indeed. And Andy, who's probably actually, in all seriousness, in the tallest place above all of us, because he's like 60 flights up a stair.
Well, not quite that much. Okay. Yeah, I'm on the top floor, but yeah, it's a tenement building in the swanky area of West End Glasgow, yeah.
Right, okay. Oh. So we're all connected by Zoom today, which is why if it feels a bit weird or sounds a bit different, that is why, all right? It's the safest way to do this. We are observing the advice, staying away. I think the three of us being in a room all together at the same time might not be the best idea. I'm just saying. No offense to you guys, but, you know, we've got to follow the advice and we should lead by example here on Tech Talk. And that's something we never do. So we thought we'd try it this week for a change. Anyway, we are going to be talking lots about tech, so don't worry. We have got plenty to be talking about. Now, last week I said to you that we were going to do my second part of using a keyboard with iOS, in particular focusing on web browsing. Well, and we're actually going to do that next week because we've got so much to talk about this week. We do think, well, I certainly did think, we're going to make it into the show or make its way into the program. So for that reason, we're going to focus on two things this week. That is your demonstration, Robin, which I think is well worth listening to, and that is using LinkedIn, the what do you call it? The social network.
Professional network.
Professional network, yeah. Which is all about, you know, if you want to get yourself into a new job this year, or you want to find opportunities that are available, perhaps for your current role, or maybe you're just looking for someone to help you with your current job, or maybe you're at college or uni or whatever, and you just maybe want to connect with other professionals, that's the place to do it. But how accessible is it? Well, Lord Christofferson himself will be checking. Got to make this happen. So Lord Christofferson will be here to tell us all about the opportunities and how it works with iOS. Apparently that's the best way to do it. Is that fair, Robin?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll get into that. Also, just on the coronavirus, we aren't going to spend too much time talking about it this hour. Everybody's talking about it. But it is interesting to note, Andy, that just this week we've been hearing that broadband services, broadband companies are saying that they will be able to cope with the influx of people who, I guess, will be using it for home working over the next few weeks. And also those kids, those pesky kids, will be off school, no doubt. And as a result of which, will be, I guess, streaming, online gaming, watching Netflix, all that stuff.
Yeah, it's one of the other things added to the list of things that we apparently are panicking about now. Mm. But the internet service providers in the UK have said that they do have contingency plans in place and that the network can deal with the extra daytime demand. This includes things like video calls and other work applications that you suddenly find yourself doing from your home computer. But some heavy traffic services are going to see a surge in use around the world as well. So yeah, that does include Netflix. That will include Xbox Live, which went down yesterday. So yes, but no, in terms of broadband, they say nobody should expect broadband to crash or anything like that. That's from Mark Jackson. He says that's not how these things work.
Oh, well, fine. We shall see. We've all heard that before. Right, okay. Well, look, Andy's going to take a bit of a break because you're going to head off and check out the emails for us. If we have time at the end of the episode, yep, we will get into a few of those. So Thank you, Andy. Now, let me introduce two guests to our programme. One is a regular contributor to blindbargains.com. She hosts her own podcasts on relay.fm as well. She's a well-known face in the world of blindness, especially around access to iOS. She writes her own books on the topic. We're going to hear about all of that. Shelley Brisbane is here with us, as is Paul Porter from RNIB. Shelley, first off to you, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. I'm glad to be here.
And we've also got Paul Porter here from RNIB as well. Hi, Paul.
Hello.
It is great to have you both here with me and Robin this week, because we have got lots to talk about. CSUN has happened. You were there, Shelley.
I was.
So how did it go? Because it was clearly scaled back.
Very, very unusually quiet, which I think we knew going in. And I think, to be honest, a lot of people didn't expect that it would come off at all, because so many other events were being canceled. And we at Blind Bargains usually go in with a team of 4 to 5 people going through the exhibit halls and also some of the vendor showcase suites and talking to people and getting announcements. And we were down to 2 instead of 4 or 5 this time. So in addition to a very scaled back exhibit hall where a lot of big vendors like Google and Microsoft and Amazon pulled out ahead of the show, there were people who were not at the show. Many Chinese companies didn't make the trip. And then, as I say, those suites where companies like Amazon and Google, some of those companies are both exhibitors and suite holders. And in those suites, they do how-tos, tutorials, and familiarize people more in depth with their products, do seminars over the course of the week. And so a lot of those companies were missing. It was a very quiet week at CSUN.
So, yeah, quiet week, but still things going on. What did you spot? What were you most interested by? What were you looking for, I guess?
Well, I think what I was looking for, I wasn't sure, because to be honest, you don't know if it's diminished. I start out looking, what are the big companies going to do? Are Microsoft and Google going to talk about new updates to their operating systems? Well, obviously they weren't there. So we were thinking more about specifically assistive tech hardware. What's going to happen in Braille? CSUN is usually a big event for Braille, and we did get some of that this year. Also had gotten some of that at the ATIA conference in Florida in January. So I don't know if people were anticipating CSUN as much as at ATIA as they seem to, but there were some announcements that came out before CSUN that were, I think, fortuitous for the companies that did them, because they got a little more attention than they would have in this diminished CSUN environment. So Braille, definitely some low vision stuff in terms of magnifiers, not revolutionary products, but both tablet-based and handheld electronic magnifiers were a thing. And then, I don't know, I don't feel like in the past we've tried to call CSUN a certain thing, like this is the year of Braille or this is the year of magnifiers or whatever it might be. And I don't think it's appropriate to say that there is an overarching theme, but I did see a few things that looked really interesting.
Well, let's start with Braille, because I've got to say, you're right. I don't think you could say it was the year of Braille, but it certainly was the year of affordable Braille, thanks to Orbit Research. Tell us about what they've announced.
So Orbit Research has 3 new products. We all know about the Orbit 20. Well, there's the Orbit 20 Plus, and then there's the Orbit 40, which I guess was the most sort of high-profile one. And then the Orbit Rider, and the Orbit 40, of course, is a 40-cell device for $1,300 US. I don't know what the translation is in euros, but it is a significantly less expensive Braille device than anything out there at that number of cells. And, you know, 40 is the number of cells I think people who are serious productivity Braille users look to. And I myself, and I'm not a full-time Braille user, but as somebody who has, you know, had small Braille displays in the past and who's considered them, I mean, when I saw that 40, my ears perked up too, because I thought that is something I could actually get productive work done with.
Yeah, that sounds nice. It does sound nice. I mean, Paul Porter's with us from RNIB. Paul, you know, the idea of this more affordable Braille display is good news, isn't it?
Absolutely, Stephen. I mean, the equivalent device you're probably looking at, you know, in the UK, maybe £3,000 or £4,000. And for me, you know, the fact it's 40 cells, it's got cursor routing, which the 20 doesn't, and, you know, a lot of our users have said we really want cursor routing. It's got onboard translation, so translating from text to Braille and, you know, from Braille to text and two-way translation. It connects to your smartphone. So, I mean, there are what we, I suppose, still call note takers on the market that retail for £3,000 or £4,000. And the thing is, they're very good, but a lot of, you know, they're using older operating systems, whereas if you use the Orbit in conjunction with an iPhone or a tablet or, you know, Android device, you've got the latest technology, but you've got your, I was going to say comfort zone, and I suppose it is a comfort zone of Braille. You've got Braille input, you've got Braille output. So for, you know, $1,300 or you know, $600 for the cheaper, smaller devices, rather, however that will translate into pounds, you know, for a device, it's affordable. And, you know, there are grants available from RNIB and other sources that people can use. And for me, you know, listeners might know me from my tech support days, now working with the RNIB library, developing the new reading services. And one of the great things we're doing with reading services is making electronic Braille available as downloadable files. So you can go on and download, you know, a book onto your Orbit and read it in Braille. Or you've got the audio version, you know. But it just gives that flexibility. I think we're seeing, and you know, thanks to you and the team on Tech Talk, because you've been talking about Braille for the last year and a half, and you've been learning Braille and giving us your experiences, which is, you know, on the whole, I think has been really positive. And we're going to be doing some work on the Orbit as well over the next few months, promoting that, promoting reading services. So I think Braille has had a real resurgence, mainly due to the new technology that reduces the price of Braille quite significantly. And, you know, it gives people choice, particularly for reading, you know, you couldn't take, you know, a 20-volume book with you on holiday or on a train, but you could have pretty much 20,000 books on your Orbit, you know, to read where and wherever you want.
It is incredible, isn't it, when you think about it? Robin, I have to get you in on this because, honestly, even you are starting to think, do you know what? Maybe it's time I get back into Braille. Am I right in saying that?
Well, I had a bit of a wake-up call the other day because I don't, you know, use Braille day-to-day or even year-to-year, I must be honest, or month-to-month, let's say. And I went to the kind of medicine cabinet the other day and nobody else was in because there are eyes around in our house usually. But and I needed some paracetamol or ibuprofen or something. And I couldn't even, this was terrible, I could not even read those packets that have grade one uncontracted Braille on. I thought, is this the right way around? No, maybe I've got it upside down. I turn it around. Still,
Robin, you shock me. That's the.
I'm just so.
It's terrible,
honestly,
isn't it?
Well, regular listeners to Tech Talk are already disgusted by my lack of getting with the program. But yeah, I mean, I don't think I would necessarily buy a Braille display up front because, you know, there are lots of sources of Braille. I've got the fingerprint course in the loft.
But, oh, come on.
Yeah, I could get that down. But no, absolutely. This is the era of affordable Braille. And I'm sure we're going to talk about the Orbit Writer in a second. That's the missing piece, isn't it?
Well, that's the thing, Shelley. I mean, for anybody who's keen to use Braille and needs that kind of, you know, keyboards, you'd have to buy a display. And that was something a lot of people have been asking us on email on this show and on other shows. I've been asked the question, you know, isn't there just a keyboard? Isn't there just a Braille keyboard for input rather than Braille screen input, which is fine. But, you know, if you actually want a physical keyboard, there isn't much out there. Now, there have been a few versions that have kicked around, but then Orbit just went, bang, here's one called the Orbit Writer.
I just love that it's the little detail that it is attached to a lanyard, so you can wear it around. You have it with you all the time. I've actually seen people carry Braille displays around their necks, but this is a far more practical solution.
Is that not like a blind thing that everything has to be on a lanyard? Everything you buy gets a lanyard.
But a little tiny keyboard for Braille seems like a more practical lanyard-based device, you know?
We should say that it can fit in your pocket very easily as well, eh?
Yeah, that's right. I can. Have you actually felt this? Have you had a play with it?
No.
But not you, Shelley.
Oh, sorry.
I have not. I see. Sometimes when we cover CSUN, I do a lot of the low vision stuff, and JJ Meadow, who is the king of blind bargains, does most of the Braille. And sometimes I'm jealous because he finds something really cool like this, and I'm like, I should have done that. So no, I didn't get a chance to see the Orbit Rider, sadly.
But it does sound like a really interesting device, doesn't it?
Yes, very much so.
You know, I think for people, some people are really quite fast writers in Braille, but not readers.
Yes.
And we're all looking for, you know, small QWERTY keyboards, and you know, there are lots of them on the market. But to have a really small device that again is Braille input, that you can hang around your neck, which I think is quite good. You know, you've got that ability to type in a form that's comfortable for you. You might not necessarily need the Braille output, but you know, Braille input will transform a lot of people's ability to use their smartphones, tablets, and computers. Because I think we all would agree that writing on a touchscreen is doable, but it's not slick.
I know many people who love it, and I'm surprised by that, because as somebody who has written about how to do it and tried to give people guidance, it wouldn't be my first preference for writing Braille, but I love the idea of the keyboard based input. I can see myself in a seminar and a lecture, you know, taking notes unobtrusively in a language. And I think that promotes Braille as well, because if people like Robin have Braille skills that they've forgotten, the reason that you forget Braille skills is not even just that you aren't reading it, it's you're not writing it. And if you're using something like this, there's much more incentive to think of Braille as a way to get information into your computer, your smartphone.
And also, I mean, there are lots of Bluetooth keyboards that you can use, you know, QWERTY keyboards, but they have to be a certain size. Otherwise, your touch typing abilities break down. You know, you can get minute Bluetooth keyboards to take with you with your iPhone or whatever if you're, you know, wanting to be really productive in inputting. But this one sounds like it's, you know, we know that with just 6 keys and a spacebar that you can be much more compact and not break the ergonomics of what you're trying to do there. So yeah, and the price point, I think, very compelling.
Yeah, did we even mention the price? It was $99. Not entirely sure how that's going to translate into pounds. Also, Paul, any chance the RNIB might sell this? Do we know?
I would hope so. I don't have that information yet. But I was just going to say as well that, you know, I use Braille input on the touchscreen on my iPhone, and it works really well, but sometimes it isn't great. But once I get a rhythm going, I can type much more quickly than I can using the QWERTY keyboard. So with a small, you know, very small pocket Braille keyboard, I think that would transform how I write on my phone. So really exciting, and I would hope RNIB will sell it, because it's a really interesting product.
I've got to say, I'm quite excited by this one. I don't often get excited by blind tech all the time, and I do get excited by mainstream tech all the time. First time I've ever thought this is something I really want to buy. So, I hope it comes to the UK soon, or, you know, maybe there's someone in America, perhaps, who lives in Texas.
You never know. Friendly. A little care package coming your way.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
The affordability factor is, I mean, if you think about what Bluetooth keyboards have come down a lot in price, but you can still find keyboards in the $100, what is that, £150, something like that. I probably shouldn't try and do currency translation on
just
the fly.
Just use dollar for pound.
Is it? Okay.
Even though a dollar is about 70p, by the time it's come over the pond, it's dollar for pound. So things are much more expensive over here.
Sure, but I mean, $99, you can certainly get a Bluetooth QWERTY keyboard for less than that, but it is not outrageous, as so much of assistive tech tends to be. And this, it becomes not just an alternative that supports the needs of blind folks, but an attractive alternative that can enhance their productivity, maybe even above and beyond sighted peers. Because if you're a fast Braillist and you're using grade 2, you can fly when it comes to writing, note-taking, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's right. And that's where I think certainly I'm keen to get to, although whether it actually happens or not, I don't know. I'm okay on grade 1 at the moment. I'll get there with grade 2. But, you know, I think that's the thing. I feel like this has been a really interesting journey for me, because I've been learning Braille for, you know, about a year and a half. Well, I say learning, in the period of a year and a half I've been learning and using it. And, you know, now this thing comes along and it's just the perfect timing. And I just think it's great. I really do. Let's talk about some other things, though, because, I mean, Braille, obviously, a major thing. You know, the Orbit Reader 20 Plus and the 40 and now this Orbit Writer. And, of course, we'll keep you up to date here on Tech Talk when it becomes available in the UK, wherever it comes from. But I would certainly hope to be the RNIB. But let's talk about low vision aids, because that was something that you were saying at the top. That's where you tend to focus.
Yeah, and a caveat that I don't know what availability of any of these products in the UK would be. And I know in at least one case, I was talking to a US distributor of a Chinese product. So if I mention product names, your mileage may vary in terms of availability, when and where, and certainly in terms of price, because I won't even give out with prices because I don't have them written down in front of me.
Yeah.
But Vispero through Optilec has released a 10-inch magnifier called the Compact 10. It's based on the existing 6-inch. Now, I hasten to add that I realize that electronic magnifiers, this is not a tablet, this is just an electronic magnifier, is not very exciting, but I liked the design of this product. I thought because it looks like a tablet and sort of has that aesthetic about it, both in terms of the physical dimensions and just the lightweightness and the fact there's a little camera that sticks out of the of an arm on the side that allows you to do distance viewing, but because it feels more like a mainstream device, it's very lightweight. For somebody who is not a candidate for a tablet, I'm thinking of seniors, I'm thinking of my mother who has age-related macular degeneration. It's just a really slick product, and I think the 10-inch size is appealing to a lot of people who might think, well, a handheld magnifier is not really what I want, but I'm not quite at the point where I want to have a tablet. Maybe it's a cost issue, maybe it's just a complexity issue for a senior. So I like that product a lot. And it has an optional, I believe it comes with a speech, OCR speech option. I believe you can buy it for somewhat less money without it. That's the way most of those things are. Sometimes you'll find a magnifier that includes speech and they only offer one option. But Optilec tends to make quality stuff. The other one I was mentioning, I talked to Irie AT, which is a U.S. master distributor for a number of AT products for blindness and low vision. And they had a number of Clover devices. And I don't know if you have Clover in the UK. It's a Chinese company, but they have a line of magnifiers all the way up from a tiny little 3.5 inch magnifier that is, you know, smaller than a smartphone, up to a big old 12 inch. Again, it looks like a tablet, but it's an electronic magnifier. And I think for seniors and for some educational applications, these are not revolutionary, but they're nice additions to the product line. Like so much of technology, many of these magnifiers are either made in China or the components for them are made in China. And I did talk to vendors specifically about whether what was going on with coronavirus and supply chain was going to affect them. And in both cases, they said they had actually produced these products before the big supply chain issues were hitting in January. So they feel like they're ahead for a few months. So they feel like they have availability. One other product I wanted to mention, which is a little more, you know, high end, and it may not be right for everyone, but it is a part of a product category that already exists. But Zoomax is, this is again, Zoomax America. And I believe Zoomax is around the world. So that product may be available in the UK, but I don't know familiarity, but I spoke with the head of Zoomax America, who was at CSUN. They have a product called the A-Sight VR, which is a VR-based headset. Well, it's a VR headset whose primary function from a low vision point of view is magnification. So you could watch television, you could read a computer screen, you could do just any distance viewing. It's not the sort of device that you would wear around as a constant visual aid, but you could use it for specific tasks. And, you know, frankly, a VR headset, if you've ever seen them, they're quite large, they're bulky. You don't have independent peripheral vision available to you. You're reliant upon what you see on the screens. And there can be challenges. It's not for everyone. But what they've tried to do is rethink. They've tried to actually pull back because some of the other VR headsets in this category are promising you all sorts of stuff, like you can watch YouTube videos and you can actually get, you know, diagnosed, have your visual acuity diagnosed remotely by a vision professional. And Zoomax is basically saying this device is for magnification of things like television and computing. And I think they're right to try to do fewer things but better. It also means they get some more battery life. It's not as warm a device to wear on your head as some of the other competitors. So those are some of the things. And the last thing I'll say about magnification is that a number of vendors were not there, not only Chinese vendors, but Reinecker, which is a German company, was not there, unfortunately. And I think a number of companies, I don't know what product availability is like for them, but I do know they're not coming to the United States for conferences like CSUN at this point.
I would be really interested to know your take on specialist versus mainstream with regards video magnifiers. Mainstream, I'm thinking, you know, an iPad, for example, or an Android tablet. They're few and far between. Now, on recent episodes of Tech Talk, we've talked about the pros and cons of something like the Orcam versus an app like Seeing AI on your phone. And there's definitely audiences for both. There's a huge price differential as well. And I'd love to know your take from a low vision expert on how what they offer over and above, because many of our listeners may not know the kind of differences there.
Sure. I think the real issue for people who, I guess, and the right way to say it is who still use special purpose magnification devices, it's often seniors. It's often people who aren't comfortable with a fully capable tablet device. And I hasten to add, there are plenty of specialized tablet-based devices where you get access to a full, in a few cases, iPad or a full Android tablet, and you also have an overlay of magnification software and OCR with large buttons that are suitable for somebody with low vision. So they're trying to split the difference in that way and give you access to both. But things that are purpose-built magnifiers, like what I was talking about, I think really have a narrowing audience, and especially the tiny ones like the 3.5-inch one, which is smaller than your smartphone. And if you have a smartphone and if you have an iPhone and you use something like Magnifier, or even if you use a third-party app, you can do much of, not all of, what a magnifier does, but you can do much of it with a smartphone. The things that you can do with a magnifier are change color modes, contrast. Some of that is available on the iPhone. It's a little less available, I think, for sort of low knowledge, low tech aware people. There is certainly a market for that. I think anybody who's a young person who is growing up having had primarily smartphones, and especially if they have had good rehab training to teach them how to use the features of their smartphone, they probably don't need those magnifiers as much. The advantage to something like a 10 or 12 inch even magnifier is that the AT companies do tend to put them on stands that are flexible and that accommodate the needs of a person with low vision, and especially in a classroom environment, because the way that it's usually explained to me, and this is not the way it was when I was a kid, and I'm jealous of this, is that somebody would take this device that's the size of an iPad, and they would go into a classroom, they would set it up on their desk, they would have a distance camera connected to it pointing at the blackboard or at the teacher so that they can get information from that screen. In some cases, these magnifiers have split screens so that you can be taking notes or looking at material on the magnifier, under your magnifier that's printed reading material, but you can also be viewing the screen or you could be taking notes. So those are very cool specific applications that I think somebody might use in a school environment, maybe even in a higher education environment. But when they go to the restaurant with their friends afterwards, they're probably using their smartphone as the magnifier.
I think there's a narrowing of the gap. Every time a new version of iOS, for example, comes out, there are additional functions, you know, and
here he goes again. He's always trying to push the iPhone. I mean, you know, he's the only one here
And I would argue it's not every time. Every couple of versions of iOS, we get some new good low vision stuff.
But that's
and
true. That's true.
There's some exciting rumors for 14 iOS 14. Guys.
Indeed, and I would say it's still not as broad. And again, I think the nice thing, and there are a couple of iPad based magnifiers now that have overlays where you get nice big bold buttons that say specifically OCR or magnification. And I think people that are used to the idea of a CCTV or an electronic magnifier like the idea that they have this choice of 20 color modes and that they have OCR. And, you know, for those of us who sort of roll our own and who like to make mainstream tech do our bidding, it's less necessary. But I also think that even though iOS, for example, has those features, they're not exposed in a way that necessarily addresses a tech phobic or tech uninformed person. That's probably the better way to put it. And so if you have good rehab training, and if your device is configured for you in a way that matches with your low vision acuity, then you're good. But if not, then you're kind of lost looking for those settings within the accessibility area of the iPhone or the iPad, hopefully an iPad, because I don't think an iPhone, even the larger ones, is necessarily a really good substitute for a magnifier just because of the awkwardness of holding it. And I get back to something as pedestrian as stands, the ability to have a device sitting up on a stand with, if not an XY table below it, the ability to put printed matter below it and essentially hands-free, except for using the touchscreen, be able to consume it. So I think I wouldn't say most people are candidates for magnifiers. And sadly, as the market, as the desire for people to have these things narrows, you're going to have less competition. And I think you probably already do. I know when I first started going to CSUN, you'd see 10 or 15 manufacturers of these magnifiers. And my challenge was, well, how do I even evaluate them? How do I say which is the best one for a person to pick? And now I have far fewer choices, and they're still at the high AT prices. I guess that's the biggest barrier too, is that you're still paying, even for a portable magnifier, in some cases over $2,000.
Yeah, and that's crazy.
Yeah. Standard assistive technology markup.
Paul, from your days in the Technology for Life team at RNIB, you must have spoken to a lot of people who had questions about magnifiers. What's your take on all this?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, you know, there is, as Shelley says, there's a place for the specialist devices. It depends what you're looking for. And you know, some people just, for whatever reason, find smartphones and tablets difficult. And I used to spend a lot of time talking to people about how you would use it as a, you know, as a blind user or a low vision user. And some people would get it and they'd go away and try it and come back and say, oh yeah, you know, it actually works for me. Other people would just, you know, seem to have a kind of block in the whole thing and just not, for whatever reason, get the whole concept. So I think, you know, there's a place for specialist devices, be it, you know, Braille note takers, as we talked about earlier, or actual magnifiers, you know, and the magnifier magnifies so people know what it does. They don't have to open an app. They don't have to learn all with touchscreen gestures necessarily. But for people who can do that, then in one device, you've got a device that does so many different functions. But I think that, you'd go to exhibitions in the UK and, you know, most of it would be video magnifiers. And again, you think, well, you know, how can all these companies survive? And of course, they haven't. So I think it's good that, you know, there is, in a sense, less choice because, forgive the pun, but it focuses people's minds, doesn't it? You know, as nice. To what's available.
Yeah.
And you don't have, you know, 30 different companies to look at and think, well, what's the difference between company one and company 25? It looks the same to me.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, when I started out, video magnifiers were, we called them CCTVs, didn't we?
Yep.
And they were massive big boxes that you couldn't move off your desk. And even in the 80s, they cost thousands of pounds. So the technology has improved. And, you know, I think portable pocket or, you know, magnifiers you can put in a bag are great because you can whip it out, do what you need to do with it, and then put it away again. I think with all technology, the biggest issue is battery life.
Robin.
And we see that on our smartphones and tablets. I guess if you're using your iPad for magnification, it's going to eat up the battery quite quickly.
But that's the point, isn't it?
That, you know,
the battery is going to be, you know, flattened with all the stuff you're doing with it. And that's why, I mean, I listen to my talking books on my Victor Reader Stream, which shocks Robin to the core, Shelley. but I do because I just love it. And I like having
dedicated
devices.
I know a lot of people
devices.
Who love the Stream. Yeah. Love it. And they're iPhone users. They come to me and I've written a book about iOS accessibility, random plug. And people will come to me and say, how do I download your book about the iPhone onto my Stream? So I've had to write that FAQ.
You got to release that as a book and sell it.
Right, exactly. On the stream, of course.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Listen, I could talk all day, and we could certainly, I mean, Paul, we could really get into this topic about remember school days and the tech we used to use. I remember the CCTV I used to use, which, you know, you needed a removals company to move it from one room to the other. It was ridiculous.
Can I say briefly that those big models still exist? Not in the same, I mean, they're not, you know, CRTs anymore.
No, that's right.
But I'm astonished that there are still,
I know,
and I didn't see many of them in CSUN, but there are, say, you know, 19, 20, 24 inch devices. And I don't know why anyone would get that. Even somebody who meets the criteria I talked about earlier in terms of like finding a magnifier more useful. There's so many portable options out there. I just don't get why you would, you know, that's personal. Maybe you'll get letters. Maybe you have people that are like, let me defend the 24 inch CCTV, but I don't get that.
The people who are using them probably would send letters, yeah. Listen, yes. Shelley.
Actual letters written under the CCTV in That's pencil.
Right. Yeah, that was how passionate they were about their CCTV. Listen, thank you both for coming on to the show. Shelley, tell us about your podcasts and where
and
people
book.
Can get your book. Yeah, absolutely. She mentioned
me
in the book.
You're going to run out of time.
But you mentioned me in the book. That's why I want you to mention it.
I did, of course, because you were kind enough to interview me about it earlier. So my book is called iOS Access for All. You can find that at iosaccessbook.com, and it is basically what it says. It is a comprehensive guide to all of the accessibility features of iOS. It has been updated for iOS 13, and as soon as Apple introduces iOS 13.4, which is imminent, there will be an update, which will be available free to anybody who buys the book, $25 US and whatever the equivalent is in the UK. So
worth every penny.
Talk about that.
Worth
yes,
every penny.
Thank you. Oh, thank you so much.
Or cent. Is it cent? Yeah, worth every cent.
Or cent. Yeah. I mean, penny is good. We say penny.
Yeah. And the podcasts?
So I do a podcast at Relay FM called Parallel, relay.fm/parallel. I talk to folks in the mainstream tech world and to folks in the accessibility tech world. I make them talk to each other, which almost never happens.
Nice.
So that's the show. And then there's a little show. What's it called? I can't remember. Accessibility Roundtable. That's it. With some guy named Robin as another panelist.
Not him.
Not him. He's always on. He always talks about that Amazon device, which I think seems wrong since we're an Apple show. But that's at maccessibility.net if you want to hear that.
Why would you want to talk about that? Yeah, okay. And Blind Bargains as well. You're part of that.
I forgot. Sorry.
Yeah,
sorry,
I know
JJ,
you're so
there.
Many.
Blindbargains.com is both a news site and a podcast site. Blind Bargains does a weekly news podcast. So if you're interested in what's going on with AT for blindness and low vision, every single week you'll get that from Blind Bargains. What we do in CSUN and ATIA and the conventions in the US in the summertime is we go in the exhibit hall and we interview vendors who have new products. That's what you'll be hearing from me and from JJ Meadow in the coming weeks, the interviews we did with folks who were at CSUN, including Orbit Research and WeWalk, who make this interesting cane technology I didn't even get to talk about.
Yeah.
And anybody that we found at CSUN that was willing to talk to us who had a new product, you will hear that interview in the next couple of weeks.
Brilliant.
We'll have to have you back on.
Definitely.
Thank you. I'd love it.
Yeah. And Paul Porter as well from RNIB. You're no longer doing the technology for life stuff, but tell us what you're doing now at RNIB. You're doing lots of different things, aren't you?
So I've got an interesting title. It's Digital Transformation Manager, and part of it is promoting the new reading services site that you've been talking about over the last few weeks.
Yeah.
That's going well. But another big part of it is to promote digital Braille. So that's promoting, you know, books and Braille devices. So the Orbit devices come into that category because it provides affordable Braille. And as I mentioned earlier, there are grants available from RNAB and other sources. So, you know, people can look at that and hopefully get one of the new exciting products. So it's really about transforming people's idea of Braille.
Guys, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Beth.
Yeah, thank you so much to Shelley and Paul for coming on this week, Robin. They were brilliant.
Really good. Huge fans of them both. Thanks, guys.
Now, let's talk about LinkedIn, because it's a social network we actually don't talk about that much. We talk all about Facebook. We talk all about Twitter. I'm not even going to mention the other ones like TikTok and Snapchat and the ones for the kids, basically, because I have no interest in going there. I'm sorry. I just don't care. I'm just saying. All right, I'm just saying.
You're not down with the kids.
I'm not. I have no knowledge of this TikTok thing. I don't know what it is. The kids
I can confirm this. Yeah.
Yeah, Andy knows this for sure. Listen, you get back to those emails. Right, so let's talk about LinkedIn because it is an interesting social network for professionals. And Robin has been checking up for us on how accessible it is on iOS.
LinkedIn, the professional network. LinkedIn is the social network for professionals. Is it worth being on there? Absolutely. It's brilliant for networking, getting in contact with people, selling your services, and just being aware of what's going on in your particular industry. Microsoft run LinkedIn, the website, and the iOS app are really, really accessible. We're going to look at the iOS app today. Open LinkedIn.
LinkedIn, my profile button.
Here we are on the homepage of the app. This is the first tab. We'll look at the tabs across the bottom in a moment, but this one's called Home. And it's a bit like your Twitter or Facebook feed. It's a mixture of people's posts, ads, and news. We're on the very top button here, which is
My Profile button.
If we went in here, we could edit details about ourselves, our photo, the company that we work for, our job, and other interests. And that will tailor the sort of things that you will see when you look at your feed. Let's flick to the right.
Search button. Double tap to search.
Now I've kept hints on because every single control is really well labeled and there are really useful hints as well to help us know what we can do with that control. So this is the search. It said double tap to search. If we did that, we could search across contacts, across contents of our feeds, etc. Really useful.
Open LinkedIn code button. Click to open LinkedIn code.
LinkedIn code. What's a LinkedIn code? Well, this is like a business card. So if you're in a networking situation, in a conference or a business meeting, you would double tap on this and it would show a barcode on the screen, plus the ability to scan somebody else's barcode. It also shows a summary of your business information. So it's a really handy way, if both of you have the app open, for you to quickly use your camera to scan in that person's contact details or vice versa.
Messaging button. Opens messaging screen.
Messaging. Now, this is really important. This is like getting sent a direct message in Twitter, for example. So a private message from somebody that you share your contact details with. We'll have a look at that in a moment, but let's carry on flicking.
Write a post button. Double tap to post.
This is just like posting something to Twitter or Facebook. You can write a message. You can add a picture or a video, etc.
Share video button. Double tap to share a video.
And this will go straight to your camera roll and allow you to share a video directly from there and add comments.
Share photo button. Double tap to share a photo.
Ditto, but this time it just goes to the photos section.
Edward Hill, scanning pens, empowerment to read independently, 3D bullet edited bullet. Actions available.
And here we are now on the feed. So those were the controls at the top. But if I carry on flicking to the right.
Hashtag bet 2020 company of the year, 7! Hashtag succeed with dyslexia, hashtag brilliant bosses, hashtag neurodiversity, hashtag bet 2020.
Still flicking.
A group of people posing for a picture.
And now we've got to an image. Now, one of the brilliant features of this app is that Microsoft's AI services automatically try and add alternative text descriptions to images. So this is a group of people.
46 reactions, 14 comments on Toby J. Sutton's post.
And we're just flicking.
Like Toby J. Sutton's post button. Comment on Toby J. Sutton's post button. Share Toby J. Sutton's post button. Double tap to share.
There's lots of ways that you can interact with each post. Now, before we look at the tabs across the bottom, let's go back up to that messages button at the top right.
Messaging button. Opens messaging screen. Dismiss messaging button. Dismisses the messaging conversation list screen.
Really useful hints there. If I flick to the right.
Messaging heading. Create group conversation button. Compose message button. Search messages. Search field. Filters button. Andrew Bretherton, Friday. Andrew sent a photo. 3 new messages. Active now. Jamie Kyo, Mullen. Hi Robin. Sure, I'd love to. Susan Quain, January 17th. Good morning. I have attached a document to my new business finance. Vesi Toshiva, January 15th. Hey Robin, I'd like to invite you to my global launch in London FDH.
I'll just stop there. So we started off by flicking through the messaging controls at the top there. They were all pretty self-explanatory. And then we got onto a list of private messages. I hope those people didn't mind having their names briefly read out and the first part of their message in each case. Really easy to send and reply to messages. Really efficient. So let's go back.
Dismiss messaging button. My profile button.
Now we're back on the homepage. If I go to the bottom left.
Selected. Home. Tab. 1 of 5.
That's where we've been all this time. I flick to the right.
My network. 2 items. Tab. 2 of 5.
My network. Let's go in here.
My profile button. Double tap to open your profile page.
We're now on the second tab, My Network. And this is where you can invite people to connect with you and you can manage the people that you're already connected with. The same four controls that we heard on the home tab exist here too.
My profile button. Search button. Open LinkedIn code button. Messaging button.
And then
manage my network.
We move on to the network screen itself.
Invitations. 1 new. Fabio is now connection. Views the profile button. 44 mutual connections. See all button. People you may know from University of Cambridge. Martin Heng, accessible travel manager, lonely planet. Dismiss button. Connect button. Karen Jackson, expert disability. Dismiss button. Connect button.
I'll just stop there. So it does offer you suggestions of people that you might want to connect with as well. This is a really easy and powerful way of expanding your network, and you'll soon find that you're up to hundreds or even thousands of contacts that are happy to share their connections with you. Let's go to the third tab.
Post tab, 3 of 5.
Now this post tab is pretty self-explanatory. Let's tap on it.
Add a document. Cancel button.
It just opens up a message editing screen.
Start post. Post dimmed button. Robin Christofferson. This post is shared without anyone button. What do you want to talk about? Text. Share photo button. Share video button.
Etc. Let's cancel that.
Cancel button. Post tab, 3 of 5. Notifications, 20 plus tab, 4 of 5.
The notifications tab are where you get invite requests, where you have people that have mentioned you in their posts, etc.
My profile button.
Let's flick past the items at the top.
Search, open LinkedIn, messaging. Recent. View Hector Minto's profile button. Hector Minto's post has been trending in hashtag accessibility. 105 reactions middle settings menu button. 3H. Wish Lori Merriman and two others happy birthday. See who's celebrating button. Settings menu button. 6H.
And now let's look at the last, and for some people, probably most important tab of all.
Jobs, tab, 5 of 5. My profile button.
On this page, you can find some information about jobs that might suit your qualifications and experience. But if you go for LinkedIn Premium, then you can get a lot more functionality on this page. Let's start flicking across.
Search, messaging, 0 save jobs button, 0 apply jobs button, career interests button. Based on your profile, heading. Head of e-commerce and trading, company, Ventulacons, digital account director, £45 negative 5, try premium to see jobs where you would be a top applicant.
There you go. So you can apply for jobs here, you can watch vacancies, really, really powerful. You might want to go for the premium if you think that this would be an area that would really help you. But just the connections, just the networking within this app and the whole social network is really, really powerful. So to wrap up, should you be on LinkedIn? Well, if you're a professional, absolutely. If you're self-employed, then yes, it's really good at promoting your business and networking with other people. If you want to get into the employment market, then definitely yes too. So LinkedIn, give it a go, guys.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Robin. That is a great piece of work. I don't say that about you very often. So,
it had to happen.
Yeah,
one time.
So look, obviously a great thing. You're a big fan then of LinkedIn, I'm guessing.
Absolutely. And whether you're in employment or whether you want to just put a network out there, which is very positive, it's unlike any other social platform in that respect. And there's huge amounts of engagement. You know, if I put the same post on Twitter and I've got an equal number of followers on both, just the number of engagements, whether it's likes or comments or reposts, is massive on LinkedIn. So seriously consider it, guys. You don't have to be in employment.
Yeah, that's the other thing. And it could help you get a job as well if you can tell people about your volunteering experiences or what you've been doing, perhaps at college or uni. It could be really good for that as well. All right. Well, look, thank you for that. I know we've got an email coming up on that. Speaking of which, it's time.
Email. We get email.
We do.
We get your email every day.
Every day.
Here's your mail today.
You know what? In a world of chaos, that always makes me smile. Right, let's get into the emails then. And mentioning Dan, because he's the first email up, and it's actually about LinkedIn, I believe, Andy.
He starts by saying, "Hello, boys. I absolutely love the show. Can't believe I've only just started listening.
Oh, come on.
It would have saved me an awful lot of time and money in experimenting with different accessible apps if I had begun listening to your podcast years ago."
Yep.
Thanks, Dan.
"My question relates to LinkedIn. Robin mentioned it on the 24th of February, and after answering a question around Bluetooth keyboards, I have recently started my first job being blind, working for a recruitment company, and I'm absolutely loving the challenge."
Brilliant.
Would you be able to explain a little bit more about LinkedIn, whether it's accessible, how it can benefit the VI community, and where I can find more info? P.S. Really enjoying the discussion about audio description. I found a really useful website called Audio Vault."
Right, okay, moving on. Yes, brilliant. Okay.
"It has a lot of free audio description soundtracks."
La 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 la.
Yeah, don't tell anyone. "It's handy as people from around the world can send in tracks, and it has quite the collection."
Yeah, no one does that. Fake news.
"Great to hear your opinion, as always." Yes, as you said, that's from Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
"Comments on this program do not reflect." Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that's right. You'll get hung. Right. Yeah, no, just move on. Move on. Don't mention it again. Yeah. So, yes, LinkedIn. Come on, Robin. Get on with it. Tell us all about LinkedIn. Oh, wait, you have.
LinkedIn, then, as we've just heard, the iOS app is the place which I would point you at. The web page is very accessible, really, really accessible. Obviously, Microsoft own LinkedIn, so you would expect them to do a good job, but it's very, very busy. And the iOS app can do everything, and hopefully you'll have just heard there that it's easy to get around. As far as online resources and top tips, etc., I would literally just say, you know, if you've got iOS, have a go. Everything will be relatively self-explanatory. There won't be any unlabeled buttons. You will just be able to explore around. You know, obviously, that was like a whistle-stop tour. But everything is pretty intuitive. So give it a go. It's really, really good.
Yeah, and listen, Dan, first, two things, actually. First of all, thank you for tuning in. Glad you're loving the show. And secondly, well done on the job, because we all know, as blind people, how hard it is to get a job in this world. And you're doing great, clearly. Anything else you need from us, get in touch. We're always here. I mean, I will certainly not know the answer. He might. Andy might even know the answer. And if we don't know, well, we'll ask our Technology for Life team. Actually, speaking of which, Ask Tech Talk. Please continue to send in your questions. I know lots of you have. And we are going to get another question answered for you next week. Actually, quite a few in the queue already. But don't let that stop you. If you want to get in touch, Ask Tech Talk. Really simple. All you have to do is use the hashtag online on Twitter. Andy is in charge of the Twitter machine.
So I am.
He takes care of that. And if you want to send him a message, then please do. All you have to do is find us on Twitter at RNIB Radio and use the hashtag AskTechTalk. And we will do our very best to answer your question. You can email your question or your comments or your queries or your complaints if you're, you know, wanting to direct them at Robin, obviously. Then you can do so by emailing techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Okay, what else is in the mailbox, Andy?
This next one is from James. He says, "Hi, guys. Thanks for the recommendations for the tech stuff in recent episodes. Not only am I using the Bose Frames and the Soundscape regularly, but additionally, I'm also using the Shure Mic, DSpeech, and the Ponte's Downloader. They're all a great additions to your podcast."
The what, Andy? Ari, the what's it called?
The
no, you Ponte's. Got it right. Nice.
RE, the Ponte's Downloader. If we take a download from YouTube, is it legal and or proper to use music or voice recordings from our podcast? Cheers, that's from Jim.
Okay, Jim. Short answer. I don't know is short answer. It depends what you're using it for, right? So if you're downloading the video or the audio of the video, which is often what I do, then as long as you're not using it for another purpose, like for a podcast, which I think you're suggesting, then that might be, it's okay for personal use, but not for rebroadcast, unless you've been in contact with the person who's made the video. So if someone's made a video, like say, for example, Robin and I made a video, and it was like, you know, the two tech guys, you know, do something
belly dancing, yeah,
belly dancing on YouTube. That's right. There's a video I would expect people to pay millions for. We could keep this charity going for years.
Not to watch.
No, certainly not. And you certainly don't want to hear the audio description of that. But, you know, if that was the case, then you'd have to contact us to say, look, is it okay to do that? But we might have used music in there that, you know, we had to get licensed, and then we'd have to go to someone else to get the music. So it becomes very complicated very quickly. Short answer is, if you're not sure, or what was it my old boss used to say? If in doubt, leave it out is the best approach I would go with here. That's just me. What, anything to add on that, Robin?
Just that if it's just, you know, people talking and they're, you know, if you've downloaded media that is doesn't include copyrighted music, etc., the answer is no.
Yeah.
You shouldn't, without asking them and getting permission. If there's anything in there that is copyrighted music, etc., the answer is definitely not.
And you know what? Even if, so say for example, there's another podcast was doing something about tech and we wanted to use it, we'd have to go to those people and say, all right, look, we'd love to use this. I mean, anything from David Woodbridge and his podcast, when he's been on here, we've got to check with him first. We can't just assume it's okay to use it. You know, that person's put a lot of work and effort in. So, you know, it's a difficult one, but I certainly would probably err on the side of caution on that one and not use it for that. But personal use, that's a different thing. That's just for you, just to have. I understand why you might want to do that. Haven't done it myself, really, unless it's been perhaps maybe a soundtrack or something, but even then, just buy it on iTunes. Okay, well, maybe got time for one more, Andy. Just a brief one.
Yes, this is a very, very quick one. It comes in from Rod. Hi, Stephen. Is it possible to get audio description with all four or ITV Hub on the Fire Stick? That's from Rod.
No.
That's very quick.
Yeah, there you go. Put that one over with pretty quickly. No, it is. So I checked this out, actually, because I'll tell you one good thing and one bad thing about the Fire TV Stick now. The good thing is that a lot of these apps, remember before, Robin, I always told you that the apps were not particularly accessible. You get the horrible, dreaded web view. Well, that seems to have stopped. A lot of these apps are now accessible, which is good, but the downside is you cannot get audio-described content on them. And weirdly, the only channel that does it across a range of devices is Channel 5. I don't get it. I mean, you know, come on, Channel 5 were once the joke of the industry, and now they are, it's like they've become the Skoda of, you know, ladder, whatever it was. Skoda, was it that the one, the car that came back?
Yeah,
the
risen to, yeah.
Yeah, what's that now? Channel 5 is a Skoda. Whoa, what a way to end. But there you go. That is it for our show for this week. If you want to check out everything we do in terms of our podcasts, then search for RNIB Tech Talk wherever you get the podcast. If you're listening to us on Freeview 730, you can listen to all of our shows there. And of course, don't forget as well, you can check us out again next time. We will be back, all separately, granted, but we will be back right here at the same time next week. Robin and Andy, thank you so much, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Cheers.
Catch you next time.